Okay, let's call the meeting to order. We've surmounted some technical difficulty here, so we're ready to go. I'd like to begin with the roll call, please.
Joyce Still.
Here.
Phil Krein.
Here.
Elaine Palencia.
Here.
Mike Smith. Sue Suter.
Here.
Okay, thank you. Are there any additions to the agenda? No? Citizen input?
Okay. My name is Barb Jewett, as you know, and I'm a parent from Mahomet. And I just wanted to say a couple of things here very quickly. I hope that you noticed the flyer that Lynn so graciously put out about Saturday, March 28th, which is National ARC Let's Go Out Day, encouraging all of us to take someone we know or love with a developmental disability out into the community, whether to the park, out to eat, out shopping. It's a national movement called Let's Go Out, and I think it's really great. And I mentioned it to Lynn the other day, and I was tickled to see the flyers here this morning. The other thing that I wanted to say is I'm concerned that some on the board think that our parents coming and asking for choices in services in the community is being perceived as we're not trying to work within the existing system. And it's not that we're not trying to work within the existing system, it's that we all know the system in the state of Illinois could use improvement. And part of the Ligas lawsuit emphasized choice, and it brought to light the fact that in Illinois, consumers with developmental and intellectual disabilities don't have a lot of choices. And this is what we are hoping to expand in Champaign County. We don't all shop at Walmart. We don't all shop at Target. We don't all shop at Meijer. We have choices. And through choices, you get competition. And through competition, you get improved services for everybody from everybody. And that's what we need to consider, is just providing people choices. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other citizen input? Okay, mental health board input?
I would like to point out that we will have a study session tonight that will start at 4:30, focused on developmental disabilities and primarily related to development of residential options. We have a person who is from the Ray Graham Center, Kim Zoller, who will be here this afternoon. We're glad to have her. She's been kind of recognized as someone who's been in the state that's done some creative things to expand CILA. And so it'll be interesting just to hear some additional viewpoints. And as I said, she'll be here. It's going to be incorporated as part of the mental health board meeting, but it'll be the first thing on the agenda. So try to be here early.
Okay, thank you, Peter. We need to approve the minutes of the last meeting, the February meeting. Those minutes are in the packet, so could I have a motion to approve?
I move to approve the minutes of the last meeting as presented in the packet.
Second.
I have a second. Is there any discussion, any corrections to those minutes? All in favor of approval?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. I have no comments for the president's comments except to welcome Sue back from a nice vacation, I hope. So I'll pass on to Executive Director comments, Peter.
Thank you. Most of you know that we have a state association that's called the Association of Community Mental Health Authorities of Illinois, or ACMI, which represents all of the boards, both developmental disability boards and mental health boards, as well as the public health boards. We also are members of a national association of county behavioral health and developmental disabilities directors. And I was recently at the conference of that group in Washington, D.C. Within the last 2 weeks I was there. It was, I thought it was interesting. I just kind of want to pass on some things. First off, I think we really are on the right track. The way our criteria is laid out is very much in line with, we had speakers from CMS, the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services, which basically, as you know, have just initiated a new rule related to home and community-based services. And for the most part, virtually everything that we talked about at our retreat was highlighted in the CMS presentation. We also had a pretty interesting focus on developmental disabilities and intellectual disabilities at this conference. We had the national guy from the association that is chair of the Developmental Disabilities Committee is a guy named Pete Moore from Ohio, a very dynamic person. And I'm on that committee, and if anybody's interested in participating in phone conversations with the NACBED Developmental Disabilities Committee, I can give you the information. We also have a statewide IDDD committee for ACMI, and I'm the chair of that committee. And people that are interested in that, participating in that committee, are very welcome to. And so just let me know about it. The key word that I heard in DC from virtually every speaker, including CMS, wasn't choice, which choice is a big one, but was integration. And everybody talked about it. And I was struck by the fact that CMS, the way they talked about the changes that they've made in the home and community-based services rule was to support integration. And they even talked about moving away from fee-for-service rate structures to case rates and capitated rates and case rates. But the idea was that that would give Medicaid money more flexibility to be used to pay for supports related to housing, and supports related to integrating people into the community. So I thought that was pretty impressive. The other two, another major area that was discussed was the area of workforce development, which is something that we've talked about here. The issues related to turnover in frontline staff and getting, top good quality frontline staff. That's not just an issue in Champaign County, it's a national issue. And there was a lot of focus on strategies to deal with that, and that'll be something I think that this board will need to look at, because I think we're in a position where we can really do something related to that. But the other thing that they talked about was the whole issue of leadership development. As most of you know, most of the community-based IDDD services were put together in the 70s for the most part. Many of them have directors that have been, were either the original directors or have been there for a long time. So a lot of people are essentially aging out of the system at the same time. And basically, it's been said that we have not done a good job of mentoring future leaders. It was an interesting program in California, and I actually had a conversation with Dean Wynn Kaur at the University of Illinois about a leadership development program for people that are working in community-based settings. And she's interested in that, and I think it could be something that could be very helpful to our entire state, because that is a huge issue. And one of the other fun things that I did while I was in DC, I met with Tony Records, who is actually based in, or was based in DC, I think he's moved to California. And we had dinner and spent a couple of hours talking about the Illinois situation. And he is interested in coming to one of our board meetings and is able to come in June. And I thought if the board is amenable, we might want to try to change the meeting date to correspond with his coming here. You know, to kind of give us an update on Ligas, the independent case management stuff that is underway, as well as the issues related to adequate SILA availability. So anyway, that was a good. I enjoyed talking to him. He's for those of you who haven't met him, he's a very interesting guy and is very dynamic and fun to talk to. So that's about it for me.
Okay.
If the board has any questions, I'll be happy to answer questions.
Was that the dean of the School of Social Work you were talking to?
Yes,
about leadership.
Dean Wynn Kaur. Mm-hmm. Right. She has been, for those of you who don't know, the School of Social Work has been probably, and I don't mean to badmouth our friends in the psychology department, but they've been interested. They've been involved with the anti-stigma efforts. They've actually put money on the table for that, and they're also, she's very interested, you know, unlike most schools of social work, which tend to focus on either developing people that are in private practice or working in education, she's interested in our areas, and so the concept of leadership development is something that she thought would be something that they would like to do. So that would be a good partner.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
And I think that would be also a good opportunity to bring people with disabilities into leadership development, because that's been missing too.
Okay, any other comments on that material? Okay, let's move to the staff report, Lynn.
Well, I was looking through it, because sometimes the staff report seems like I wrote it a million years ago, and it's true. We had sort of finished the template when I wrote the staff report, and then Pete and I started working on significant revisions to the template for program summaries, because the criteria this year are pretty different from previous years, so we felt like the current template didn't capture those changes, and so we're working on it. And testing the template at this point. So, okay. Otherwise, nothing. I don't think there's been anything groundbreaking since I wrote that. So.
Okay, anything about somebody else going to do? Oh, you're going to get to the Alliance later.
Yeah,
okay.
I can do that.
Okay.
You want to do it now?
Well, you could.
Sure.
It's kind of part of your.
Well, there's a copy of a draft. This is the last draft of the ad that we developed for the Ebertfest program book, but there are a few changes since then too. So it was press time for the board packet, but there have been a couple changes to that, not significant. The most important change though is that it's not the Anti-Stigma Alliance anymore, consistent with what Pete learned at NACBID. We're making the shift away from anti-stigma language. The purpose still does include challenging stigma and discrimination, but the frame is a little more positive. Interestingly, some of the artists who've been involved with us for a while are liking this. So that was a nice surprise. I got an email last night about how great that is. So anyway, we're still working on associated events. We've got the private art show at the Springer, and it's in the VIP room, so the only people who will see the art are the Ebertfest VIPs, but they have tended to be the big spenders on our art shows anyway, so it's great. And a few of the artists were willing to put their work up for a whole week and not be there with it. It's a big step for some people, but some were really ready. So we've got that. I'm working on another, you know, possibly a smaller, similar installation that could be up for a week or more, if people are willing to part with their work, but that'll be for public viewing. And then we're still trying to figure out how to do the kind of market style show that people have enjoyed doing in October and April each year. I haven't got an obvious venue, so Mary Susan Britt from Ebert Fest is helping me work on something now that we might be out in the street. So that'd be kind of fun. We'd actually have to throw it together pretty fast because it'll be depending on weather. So that's all a big if. Otherwise, the film is selected, and some people are looking at the whole film this week. But we have not received the word that it's okay to share its identity, although I think the full Ebert Fest schedule is being published today. So maybe the cat's out of the bag later today, but I'm not allowed to say it yet. Otherwise, it's just sort of business as usual, pulling together the promotional pieces and identifying panelists. So, okay.
Thank you, Lynn. Any questions for Lynn? Okay, do we have information from the agencies? Anyone?
I have a couple of things that I just wanted to share that BSC has been involved in and working on. One, I think we've mentioned in the last few months that we...
There you are.
Hello. Better? We mentioned a couple months ago that we're in the process of a CQL certification, and I know that Jennifer mentioned that with Community Choices as well, and I think theirs is at the beginning of April, and ours is scheduled for the beginning of May. So the most recent activity for us has been a self-assessment of the agency and kind of where we're at with person-centered planning and some of the key elements and factors that are consistent with CQL certification. So the timing of having Kim Zeller come today at 4:30 for the Mental Health Board meeting is really good, and so we're looking forward to hearing from her. Also, several months ago, I was asked to join a DD quality committee, and actually Kim Zeller is the chair of that committee. And we've been charged with defining quality and recognizing national indicators, which is something that will be really nice to bring to Illinois. There's people that are doing that all across the country, and we are a step or two behind at the state level. And I think that the DD Quality Committee is something that has been in place off and on over the years. There's a lot of momentum periodically, a lot of good recommendations that come out of that, and then when it kind of works its way up, the hierarchy gets stalled a little bit. And I think with everything that's going on with CMS, the timing is right for us to really be able to make a difference statewide and make some recommendations that will affect BALC, and which is the Bureau of Accreditation and Licensure, and also BQM, which is a Bureau of Quality and Management. And there's some duplication in those things, and sometimes those things get in the way of us being able to reflect on the person-centered planning and implement. So I'm excited to be a part of that, and that's gaining some momentum, and that we meet monthly, and we've kind of been on tour in terms of where that's happening. We've got a meeting next week. In addition to that, there is what is now called the Life Choice Project, which is the ISSA project, the Independent Case Management Project that Darlene spoke about a little bit last month. And that providers, this DD Quality Committee was invited to that meeting in February. And we represent a lot of different providers in the agency, and so we're introduced to that system. And I've been appointed the chairperson for Team 5. There's six teams identified within that process, and that one is the quality component of that. So the intent is to be able to make some recommendations about how providers and PASS and families and consumers can all kind of partner together to work toward the same goal. And so I think that there's a lot of things, there's a lot of activity happening with people at this table at the state level. If we can streamline those efforts and not have everything running parallel, there's some good benefits to that. So there's a couple of ways that I'm working with Kim, and I'm looking forward to hearing what she has to say in terms of what's happening at Ray Graham and what's happening just in the Chicago area. And then lastly, local funding. There's a shift toward increasing community employment, which is demonstrated in the FY funding requests for FY15. Transition will be realized one person at a time. We've talked a lot about, there's people that are receiving traditional services and still requesting those, and then the shift to want to do community employment and community integration. And I think that transition is going to take several years, and we appreciate the support and the momentum that's going with that. I think with references to Employment First and LIGAS, that everybody's kind of looking at that closely. And like I said, there's a lot of representation at the state level with people here, and it's challenging, but it's a really exciting time for, I think, for this community, because we're on board and moving in the right direction. So I think there's some good things to come. So thank you. I knew you would have to say something.
I just had one. mine was actually speaking and thanking Peter for bringing the leadership thing up. You and I have spoken about that a few times, several times before. I just want to echo that there's a big void in training and leadership. There's been at least 8 CEOs around the state that have been key implementers for many years that have retired in the last few years. There's going to be at least a dozen in the next 3 years or so. That I look around our state association, and half of that board will be gone. More than half of they'll be gone. There's good people like your speaker this evening. She's on that board. There is some young people on there, but there's not the leadership people aspiring to those jobs. I'd encourage you, Peter, to talk with Sue Gray at United Way. There's been a local group of some agencies that are provided by you fund through the Mental Health Board and are also funded by United Way. They're looking at some leadership training. Right now, they're really defining whether they're looking more at the mid-level or the upper level. And, you know, that's tough because some agencies are smaller and larger, but the leadership and management skills are necessary in both those, and they're looking at a program right now. And I think it'd be a good time to see. They're trying to tie the university and Parkland and that stuff in, so I think it'd be a great thing to consider. Thank you.
Yes, darling, go ahead. Well, that's good news. any questions about this material or other agency input? Okay, thank you, all of you, for that.
Madam Chair, that is exciting, and I just appreciate, because I know how busy all of you are in your schedules and the people you serve, taking a leadership role, because that just helps us in Champaign County. So I appreciate that.
Thank you. Okay. We're going to move on to the financial report and the approval of claims for this month. Those claims are included in the board packet, and we need a motion to approve those claims from the board.
Anyone? Go ahead. So moved.
Okay.
Second.
And we have a second to approve the claims. Any discussion? Any questions about those claims? Okay. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? All right. The claims are approved. And then we'll move to new business. We're fortunate to have Chandra Somerville here to give us a kind of update on the cultural and linguistic competence planning progress report. So I turn it over to you, Chandra.
Good morning, everyone. In your board packet, I provided a briefing memo for you all to see kind of the progress that has happened with the Mental Health Board and the Developmental Disabilities Board as far as infusing cultural competence as a value throughout the entire organization. And first of all, I just would like to say to the DD board, I think that there have been some really great strides that have been made from a lot of the organizations. It was a process that was not familiar to them initially, and so they have kind of really stepped up and really, we've really fostered some really good things. I can honestly say, and if you don't mind me sharing, Sally, if that's okay. Sally and I worked together. She was really concerned about Latino families actually being able to access services. And the steps that she took to ensure that they received certain access to the speakers, by even bringing translators in to have their separate group. The group didn't necessarily want it to be separate, but we wanted to make sure that we could still accommodate the families rather than not having anything at all. And so we didn't just look at it from an event perspective, but they actually looked at it, and this is a CU Autism Network, they actually looked at how they could provide it overall as an organization. So that was one example that was really one of those situations where it was like, we don't know, and we kind of worked together and really built a relationship surrounding building the value of cultural and linguistic competence. So I just wanted to say that about the CU Autism Network. So, oh, you're welcome. Okay. So I just wanted to remind you all that cultural and linguistic competence is not necessarily a destination. It's definitely a journey. It's not something that will end. As I sit and listen to the different things that are happening on the national level, the state level, things are constantly changing. And that is how cultural and linguistic competence is. It's consistently changing. Values are always shifting. And most of all, populations are shifting as well. So as I tell you, I like to put up inspirational. It's a journey. It's not a destination. So be safe as you're doing it. And it's okay to get some bumps in the road as long as you can know that you can ask for help and also be open to the new opportunities. So what we'll do today is give you an overview of the process and the accomplishments that actually happened. This is actually listed in your briefing memo. If you look at after the briefing memo, this is actually a timeline, and I put draft because Peter always told me that when you put draft on something, you can always update it and make changes if you need to. So one particular change that I wanted to make sure that we put that's very important is the report from the Surgeon General was in 2001, not 1999. So I just wanted to make sure that that was updated. So this kind of gives an overview of what has actually happened with the Mental Health Board and the Developmental Disabilities Board as far as the value of cultural competence. If you can see, this journey has actually started almost 11 years ago. And as you notice, they made it a priority because they wanted to ensure that organizations were not just saying that they're being culturally competent, we begin to look at how we can be more accountable. So if you notice, this is the progress that it took to even build more accountability. And most of all, it not just being a plan that was in the drawer of someone every time it was time to get funding, but actually looking at clear-cut action steps. And agencies have been definitely reporting on that this year. I'll talk about some lessons that I've learned as a result of the process. And then there's also updated research and reports on disparities and disproportionality. And I'll make sure I provide you those definitions, and we'll have time for questions. So just to kind of give you a review, cultural and linguistic competence is the state of being able to function effectively in cross-cultural situations. It's not just looking at one side, but it's actually looking at a both and. And so this definition is adapted from the individuals that are listed in the PowerPoint. And then when we think about linguistic competence, it's the ability to provide information in a manner so it can be easily understood by diverse audiences as well as groups. And this is not just looking at language. This is looking at literacy level. It's looking at jargon. It's looking at the different acronyms, making sure that they are translated for all of the participants. So one of the things that I was listening to you all talk about this morning is the ability to understand what choice is versus integration. But you are also making sure that families understand that as well, not just the providers. So that's an example of being linguistically competent. Disproportionality, in general, it's disproportionate representation or disproportionality. It actually refers to the over or under representation of a given group, often defined by racial, ethnic backgrounds, and also can be defined by socioeconomic status, national origin, English proficiency, gender, sexual orientation in a specific population or category. And this also can be viewed as well in the disability community as certain populations that may not have access to developmental disability services as well. Disparities. The condition or fact of being unequal. And some examples of that is not having access to health care, no access to healthy food in poor neighborhoods, an underdiagnosis or an overdiagnosis, and no equal access to mental health services or access to developmental disability services. So it's important that we know that in our community, particularly, that if there's only one organization providing it all, that's definitely a disparity because they cannot obviously meet the population of all of the persons with developmental disabilities. So as my role as the Cultural and Linguistic Competence Coordinator, I provided support for agencies. One of the feedback that I received when I first started this was that it was not a clear way of how do we actually report. So we actually developed a standard template and reporting form that actually looked at the actions, time frame, persons responsible. We looked at the benchmarks, and we also looked at how you would actually measure that. And then there was consultation, technical assistance. I also provided training for organizations, and then I did face-to-face site visits myself. And that was actually a time where I got to learn a lot more about the agencies that I necessarily didn't know about. And so I thought that that was a real important value for me, because sometimes when we're implementing policies and procedures or saying that this is what we're wanting, if you're not sure about the culture or even the nature of the work that the organization is doing, then it's kind of hard to make demands. And so that was one of my lessons learned that I got for me. So as you look, there were standard reporting guidelines, and this was by the funder, and it was to develop and review the cultural competence plan biannually with feedback from management staff and individuals served by the organization. So this was not just something, as I said before, that was just going to be done just in time for funding. This was actually going to be something that was done all year. Develop a policy for timely provision of interpretation of services, conducting an annual organizational cultural competence assessment, and to begin identify and recruit diverse membership on board of directors, and complete annual cultural competency training. So this was just standard baseline requirements that were for the governance and policy levels or the board levels. For administration and the management level, they would begin to assess and modify the facilities to ensure accessibility to reflect the population of focus and begin to be welcoming in a clean and attractive environment and providing different cultural art and magazines, toys, et cetera. And I know that I went to several organizations and they actually stated, like, how do we go and get other types of magazines? How do we look at subscriptions and how do we decide and determine? And so I encourage them to look at your population. And so if your population is like, this is, I know this is the old magazine, but you wouldn't have Hot Rod magazine for persons that are probably 75 and older, because that may not be interest of them. Also, if you are serving African Americans, they may not be necessarily interested in Martha Stewart's daily living. And so it's important to look at your magazines, looking at your different paintings that you have on the wall that speaks to everyone. So the management began to look at that more intentionally, providing services in community-based settings. And what that's saying is that looking at not just having people come to them, but actually going to do services out in the community. So that's home visits, that's looking at different locations where it can be accessible in different neighborhoods where people may not normally be able to access services, as well as looking at an advisory board that reflects the community's diversity and individuals and families that provide back on a consistent basis. So this is what we had encouraged the management to do. Also develop a plan to recruit and retain a diverse workforce. As I was sitting and listening and you talked about the challenge of workers and the high turnover, when you develop a true plan on how you're going to execute that, and most of all providing the support, you'd be able to retain and the diverse workforce. Also establish a plan of support or incentives for supervisors and workers to prevent burnout and compassion fatigue. This work is hard work, and one of the things that we need to look at is ways that we will support the workers who are actually doing the work. And so management was also expected to come up with an action plan for that, and then cultural competence plan training. For direct services, they would plan and implement outreach engagement to promote behavioral health or disability awareness. We looked at individuals and their families or identified support system. They will actually have the primary decision-making role. So I know that several organizations practice person-centered planning, so that would be an example of that. And at a minimum, the direct staff should complete an annual cultural competence training and ensure that documentation of individuals' progress is strength-based. If you write and write your notes, they should be able to come back in 10 years and not see that that worker may have badmouthed them or said different things in their documentation that may either basically was talking about them in a negative way. Also, you want to ensure that you collect and enter race, ethnicity, and primary language of individuals. What I've learned in my journey is that there would be two people, if you say Jose Gonzalez, there are three people by that name. And oftentimes what happened is records would get mixed up. So what they encouraged was actually had, or Mark Smith. You have one Mark Smith that's white, you have one Mark Smith that's black, you have one Mark Smith that may be Latino, and you just wouldn't know because there was not any data that was collected on their race, ethnicity. And also planning appointments and meetings that are accessible for individuals and families that will not conflict with their work. What often happens is that people are expected to take off work and then they're missing pay. And so then when they're missing pay and then they miss their appointment, then they're kicked out of services. So what we tried to do was encourage direct services to kind of plan those appointments surrounding that. And then also identifying natural and informal supports for the individual and their family. Natural and informal supports are those mentoring programs, or like you said, just the program that's actually happened or the event where you're just taking a person out in the community that has a developmental disability or a disability. It's just encouraging that as well. So individuals and their family, this was, of course, standard reporting, serve on an advisory board or committee, to work with the construction of services that were provided by the organization. So we encourage consumer-led advisory boards, identifying informal supports in the community as a resource for agencies, and reviewing information so that it can be easily understood. So although we definitely have policies and procedures, funder guidelines that we need to do, but if it's not easily understood by the person that's being served, that's kind of defeating its purpose. So we wanted to encourage that the families actually would speak up and say, hey, we don't understand this, and being able to talk about this. And also partner with the direct service team to ensure that outreach activities are planned. So not just being a part of just one particular event, but actually looking at ways that, hey, we want to build awareness. So we have the buddy walk, we have the different walks, we have the Ebert Fest, where we encourage people with persons with disabilities to promote their art. So those are examples of outreach. So this was the reporting requirement. There were 21 agencies that were funded by the Mental Health Board, and 7 funded by the Developmental Disability Board. And so all applicants, whether you are applying for funding, are required to submit a cultural competence plan, and all funded agencies were required to present on their quarterly progress. One of the things that is changing for the fiscal year 15 that's coming up is that it's going to be only second and fourth quarter, so it's not going to be quarterly, and that will be able to give people an opportunity to kind of build more, and you're still looking at it, but it's not just going to be as often. So this is the actual progress on the agencies, and this is from fiscal year 13. That had reported. If you notice or call your attention, 6 out of the 7 organizations that were funded did report, and then 1 agency did not report quarterly. That does not mean they did not submit a plan. It just means that they didn't submit their quarterly progress. So some of the ways that people have annually implemented their cultural competence plan, and I've shown you, and you can look at that and see, for example, you have young people who are serving on boards now. You have governance where they've actually put in time. A lot of times people say, we don't have time to actually cover the expense of cultural competence. But if you get the paid time off to do it and support that, those are examples of what some boards have done. And then also EAP, which is the Employment Assistance Program, that's been really helpful for the support around staff to reduce compassion fatigue or burnout. And so most of the agencies that are in the DD actually have some type of cultural competence committee, and they actually bring information back to the board and the decision makers, as well as management. And then also looking at ways that they've implemented a recruiting plan on how to attract and diversify new people. And then an agency-wide cultural competence assessment. And so, as you can see, everybody actually signs and dates their cultural competence plan annually. So every person in the organization should actually know that there is a cultural competence plan. It's not just someone who is in management. But one of the things I did when I first started was I wanted to create a baseline. And creating a baseline for me is, let's make it as simple as possible. So I would call different organizations and talk to random people, from the front desk worker all the way up to middle management or someone like the janitor. And I would just ask, did you know your organization had a cultural competence plan? They were like, no. So what we did was we wanted to make sure that we raised awareness. So as a result of that, all of the agencies actually read and sign and review their cultural competence plan annually. And then if you look at examples of how CLC has been implemented. We also have families that present service satisfaction or the results from their satisfaction surveys at board meetings. There are a couple of organizations that are working with families directly to say, here's what we're satisfied, here is what isn't helping. And so that's a definite way to help that as well. And then one of the things that some of the youth and families actually did as a part of it, they helped create a glossary and an acronym guide so that terms were easily understood. And it was not just for the professional terms, it was actually text terms and different things like that. And so we made that accessible as well. So one of the things I can say about lessons that I've learned in this role is that making sure that there's clear communication about CLC and a clear definition of what CLC actually was needed to be established at a baseline. And I also learned that the process of any kind of change that's adaptive is very frustrating. And then also, CLC is not just the responsibility of me, but it's the responsibility of everyone. And then also, disproportionality in juvenile justice and alternative education is still at a high rate. And one of the things I wanted to bring to your attention is a lot of the young people who are in juvenile justice and the alternative school education are young people who may have had a developmental disability diagnosis and may have not received it early enough to get the proper help that's needed. And so what tends to happen is that oftentimes African Americans are sent on a behavioral track and then they are not getting the necessary help they need. And then there's also not necessarily acceptance of when a child is first born, particularly in the culture of African Americans or Latino, that there's actually something wrong with my child. And that's also a stigma that's associated with that. So it's about raising awareness and how we're going to ensure that we get the word out that let's get everybody tested and equal access to all populations. Other lessons learned is that the agencies were really gracious and actually open to the support of my role. And so they didn't see me as a threat. They may have at first, but like when we went and talked and, you know, actually spent time together, they just saw me as a support, which was really, you know, helpful. And then also that cultural competence is that being aware of like your own personal biases that impact the quality of care that is actually provided. And so when we know that our personal biases is impacting quality of care, that's when we need to kind of see like, okay, how can we change this? Also, I've also learned that if we did not have support from you all, that that was without the implementation of funding requirements, we may not be where we are today. And so I'm really grateful for that. And then demographic and data collection on ethnicity are not necessarily driving decisions about what services are offered. So that was another lesson that I learned as well. So in your packet, if you know, there's some things that are updated. We actually have national standards for culturally and linguistically appropriate services in health and healthcare. So this is not just for health organizations, this is for community organizations. And just to let you know, as of July 1st, 2013, communication and language assistance, which is standards 5 through 8, are going to be required to receive any kind of federal funding. And I've noticed that the state has actually, DHS has actually sent out a linguistic assessment for different organizations to actually fill out so that you can talk about the population that you're actually serving. And then there's also a blueprint on how to use data to reduce disparities and disproportionality in human services. And then there's actually an action plan to help reduce racial and ethnic disparities. And these standards were actually made as a result of those plans. So what I'm providing next, I'm actually working on a yearly progress for all funded agencies by June of 2014 that actually shows your progress from the last 2 years. And so that will show how you've grown and how you can continue to progress. And also, we're going to present recommendations on the sustainability plan for CLC monitoring. As a result of the Access Initiative grant, my position has been funded federally. So once that federal dollars go away, what we're doing is we're looking at how we as a community are going to provide the sustainability for technical assistance and collaboration from Cultural Competence Committee. And then also, I'm going to provide examples of how CLC was actually sustained in certain communities. In one community in Monroe County in New York, they actually have an entire cultural competency department within their county that actually looks at services, not just for people receiving services, but it also helps contract brokers so that you can help navigate those systems. So for example, PATH facilitators, if we need PATH facilitators in the community, they would go through that cultural competence department and be in the system and say if you need to access one, so it would all be housed in one location. And then definitely continuing to provide support. So it's actually time for me to go and do another visit with the agencies as they continue to build their journey. And so I am currently housed at a Prairie Center. So you can definitely contact me there if you need any additional support. I've listed my information there. And then also I encourage everyone to go to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and this is Office of Minority Health, and they actually provide lots of resources and training on cultural competence. So are there any questions? I know it was a lot of information.
I just am curious about the reach of your job. We hope this doesn't happen, but let's suppose there's a family who thinks that they're not this part of their dealings with an agency is not working. Are you the person they would call? Do they know about you? Is that part of your job? What would they do?
No, that's not my role. Mm-hmm. That's actually what I've encouraged agencies to do, mm-hmm. is to find a mechanism on ways that they could report that to their organization. Mm-hmm. I'm solely for the monitoring of their plans and how they're implemented there, mm-hmm. but I don't do any like sanctioning or complaints mm-hmm. to the organization. That's mm-hmm. not my role. Mm-hmm.
So if a family wasn't getting services, they would?
If a family wasn't getting services, they should definitely contact the management mm-hmm. or the person or this whatever kind of system. Like, how do you do a complaint process? Mm-hmm. What is your process within your organization? Mm-hmm. So that should be a part of the agency's responsibility. And we hadn't even thought about, like, okay, call here if this is happening mm-hmm. regarding the mental health board. And I'm not sure if they even provide that service.
Yeah, I suppose if there were an office of cultural competency in the county, that maybe would be what
yeah.
part of their role.
So okay. in most counties, that is actually, that does take place within that mm-hmm. structure. Mm-hmm. So like if, for example, if a person who works for organization B mm-hmm. Did not feel that they were hired or that they were discriminated against because mm-hmm. they were in a wheelchair. Mm-hmm. What is their recourse? Mm-hmm. There's definitely a huge process within our community. So there's mm-hmm. human relations in both of the cities. Mm-hmm. But as a part of our county structure, I'm not sure if we have that kind of structure mm-hmm. within our system.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions or comments?
Well, I just wanted to maybe add a little bit to our Access Project. So I think your question is a great one. And so I think what will surface as we continue to gather our data from families and the youth that we're serving and working with will be a series of recommendations. And so we might find, or we are starting to find, that families may not feel connected to services that are available to them. So how do we strengthen that? So that's part of what Chandra will be doing, and she talked about making future recommendations on how we strengthen cultural competency and linguistic competence in our community as a whole. And so I think we can look around this meeting monthly and see that we've got some diversity gaps. So whether it's through leadership in organizations, on boards, as well as services, family involvement, in the area of disability and intellectual disabilities, we've got some gaps that we need to address.
Thank you, Tracy. Someone over here, yes.
I had a question about the full report, the yearly progress for all funded agencies that you were going to do in June. Is that counting the current year?
Mm-hmm. Until August.
So I was wondering if you were going back to the year prior to this one, or what was part of that review?
So it's actually going to be 2013 and part of the first part of 2014. Well, I think about the different efforts that are actually happening all over. So you have, I'm not sure if you all are familiar with the Cradle to Career initiative. So that's a particular initiative that's looking at how you can begin to encourage families from the cradle to say, okay, if you notice something, how can you, or who do you go to accept those, to access those services? I think it also starts with not telling people, okay, you got to come to us, but actually putting the message out within the school districts. And then I know that we actually have partnered with ROE to look at how we can have trauma training, and there would definitely be some cultural competence training also in there. And then you think about like the IEPs and those services for 504 plans that actually outline, it's getting parents to actually know and to speak up, hey, I need to access the services, and also making sure that they're demanding quality care as well. Because oftentimes I've heard in the community, they say, oh, we don't have any money to do this, or we don't have any money, we can't provide this. But the other side of that is, even though there's a lack of resources, is it still quality? And I think that that's a question that hasn't always asked. Personally, because of the way that we're funded, I have not done any direct work with the schools, but there are pockets of people that I've worked with. So the social workers, I've worked with them, and we've partnered with them, but not as an entire system.
One of the things, Dale, that we've done is, hope it's okay.
Yeah.
Is develop a family-run organization. And so Regina Kreider's heading that up for us. And she has a child with more mental health issues. But we talk a lot about families and working with people that have lived experiences or that have gone through the process. And what we're finding is that these families are really stretched, stressed, and they have multiple kids. So there are a number of contributing factors on why they're not doing the outreach or they're not as engaged. And so we're looking at how we put supports together, how do we do peer-to-peer work. I know that Regina's going to be reaching out to all of us for referrals for families, individuals that we can get engaged to help with training, peer-to-peer work, helping build a foundation from the family structure for a support base. So, yeah, no, that has started to happen. And so we talked about you yesterday as a person she needed to connect with. And so you'll be hearing a lot more about this family-run what's the name of it, Chandra?
The Family and Youth Alliance.
Family and Youth Alliance.
And so, they actually are looking for board members with parents with lived experiences, but also persons that are allies. So it's not just for, it's for all persons that have an interest in consumer-led, family-run, person-centered, that have those values, but also have board experience and community experience as well.
School is involved. Planning committee. They meet on Fridays.
Okay.
Oh no, that's great.
I wanted to underscore the importance of this last point about early identification, because we're seeing so many cases of adults who missed getting evidence of a developmental disability before the age of 21, and they can't qualify for DD services. And some of those folks, maybe for the same reasons that they evaded diagnosis, have really complex service needs too. So there, we really have a problem. I don't know if it's just that the door is open and now I see the problem that was always there, or the problem is actually getting worse. But I think there is some people just have trouble getting a developmental pediatrician to look at their kid, period. And that, so some of it may be a very simple provider recruitment issue, but I think other times it's complex and involves some of the disparities that you've been talking about with us for many years. So, anyway.
Any other input on this subject? Very interesting. Very good for us to hear what you're doing. Anything else? Well, thank you so much for your presentation.
You're welcome.
Is there anything that you would like to say right here at the end, something we're not doing as a board, something we need to look at that we're not looking at?
I won't say that there's a particular, concrete thing. What I would like to encourage the DD board to do is, and I think you all even brought this up at your retreat, that you all are interested in looking at the value of cultural competence and how we're going to be being more intentional about reaching to underrepresented communities. So if you could just continue to keep that before you, that there are invisible communities that have no idea how to even access the services, and how you can encourage your networks to outreach to those communities and learn those communities or those persons.
Mm-hmm. And not, I think because we do have the plan in place and you in place, maybe we think that's taken care of. So what you're saying is we need to keep on top of that. And
I think it's not just a one or, it's a both and. So it's more collaboration or communication surrounding what is your understanding of it and how is it that we want to intentionally reach underrepresented populations.
Okay.
And then sharing your stories. I think that that's also important too, because sometimes there's an assumption that you're not going through it either. So I think sharing stories is really important as well. Mm-hmm. Like, how did you all become a part of the decision-making body that looks at services for mm-hmm. intellectual and developmental disabilities?
Mm-hmm. Anything else? Well, I'm sure we could talk all morning on this topic. It's so complex, and thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, moving down the agenda then. We've talked about the Alliance event for old business. And so the last thing is simply that of the old business is that the notes from the retreat that we did on January 25th are in the packet for information, just kind of a summary of what came up. So we should keep those to hand as we go forward. Did anybody have any? Go ahead.
This is, regarding the Alliance, I wanted to invite any board members that wanted to participate in any of the committee meetings to contact Lynn, and you can be involved in that way.
And the expo, too.
And the expo, too, right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, it turns out I wasn't getting any of the emails I just discovered. okay, anything about,
I'll get you caught up today.
Okay.
They're going to your EDU, what they're doing. I noticed that. They're going to your EDU instead of your new email account. That's
Wow, I don't know how to eradicate that old email. It keeps popping back up. And
I thought I'd sent you an email.
That's... It's like years old, and I keep smacking it down, and it comes back. Okay.
What? That EDU email is listed on the county board, DD board website as your contact email.
I thought that had been changed. Oh, well.
We'll change it.
Okay. it's like a virus. It keeps coming back. Are there any... do we, the board, have any announcements? Or I should say, was there anything else to say about the retreat? I didn't ask. I think we've got that information to read through a summary. Okay, any board announcements? Any sort? Okay, any last thoughts on anything? And I think we're adjourned. Thank you all for coming to the meeting.